I want to turn to some of the questions I asked today and on Friday and the information you gave me. Today you said that in terms of the complaints mechanism, it was best handled by the IPCC. However, I would like to point out that 5 overseas experts recruited by the IPCC itself stepped down from the panel, citing doubts as to the independence and capacity of the IPCC. And then a November 2020 court ruling actually confirmed that the current system is inadequate for investigating police violations. So I want to explore, or if you could provide some explanation of why this is the only mechanism considered, given these concerns expressed by the experts hired by the IPCC, as well as the court. That said, I note information that 52 of the recommendations made, 52 were implemented, and then 78 measures were introduced as a result. I note as well that this information is contained in the IPCC annual report of 2020 to 2021. However, permit me to note that the wording as to these recommendations and the implementation measures is quite vague in the report. So can you elaborate on what those recommendations precisely were as opposed to the themes, and what precise measures were implemented as a result of the recommendations? And in relation to the information provided, could you give us actually precise information as to the chemical substances used against protesters and not just tear gas? In particular, we'd like to know what is the chemical composition of the substances used and the manufacturing details, particularly in light of some of the information that we obtained that tear gas used was past the expiry date. Since we have the time, honourable members of the delegation, could I point out that I did not get answers to some of the questions I raised, for instance, around medical facilities for persons arrested and detained? Could you please explain, I will ask again, why out of more than 2,000 complaints lodged, the bulk have not been reviewed? And are any of the persons, is there a timeline for doing so? Could you also explain for us if any individual officers were held liable, and if not, why not? And finally, given these competing allegations, many from international organizations and civil society, of excessive violence, as opposed to your responses of that the protesters were violent, can you say whether the government would consider some overarching commission of inquiry that would investigate all of these competing allegations and then determine exactly what happened? On that score, permit me to remind you of the standards of the covenant, particularly as interpreted most recently by our General Comment 37, which talks about an individualized assessment of culpability. So in other words, not tainting an entire assembly because of the actions of just a few people. The allegations of civil society was that there was isolated violence, but in response, the police tainted the entire assembly. Furthermore, our general comment points out that the duty of the national authorities is actually to facilitate assemblies, and that the exception of national security actually raises a very high threshold. It's not just isolated violence, it's actually things dealing with the territorial integrity of the state or serious violence, and that, with respect, did not occur here. So if you could give us some more details about this and whether how this will be addressed, these competing allegations, I'd be very grateful. And finally, just on the subject of universal suffrage, I'm a bit puzzled by your response that actually the reforms represent improvements and that they are broader representation. Perhaps you could clarify this for me, because my understanding of the reforms was that even though the seats increased, actually less seats are now directly elected. So before it was 35 could be elected directly, now it's only 20. And as I pointed out, the Elections Committee, which is a 1,500-member body, elects the bulk of these seats, whereas 4.5 million voters in Hong Kong elect only 20. So that actually seems smaller both in absolute and relative terms. So, and then of course there's the pre-screening and the fact that people are now disqualified for their political views. So could you explain how can you describe this as broader? And ultimately, members of the delegation, I thank you for your commitment that the for your assurance that the commitment to universal suffrage will be upheld. And I perhaps allow me to close by asking if you have a timeline for implementing this. So once again, thank you very much for your answers, and I look forward for any further information on these follow-up questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bulkan. I will give over the floor now to Mr. Tsang for perhaps some brief